Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmakers Show. So today we have an amazing founder, really. I mean, the company that he's writing, I mean, it's quite the company. You know, it's a very interesting sequence of events there when it comes to reverse mergers and transactions that they've done. And now they're a publicly traded business. But we're going to be certainly talking about all of the good stuff that we like to hear about building, scaling, financing. Also, what inspires him and what inspired him to have that perseverance, no, as a founder, as well as how to articulate the value of what you're selling, you know, and your business. Also growing into becoming a public company CEO, and many other really incredibly inspiring topics that we're going to be covering today. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, and that is Adam Mendelsohn. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Alejandro. It's a pleasure to be here.
So originally born in California, in Santa Monica, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
It's hard to complain. It's only after I moved away from Santa Monica for my graduate school did I learn to appreciate how good that I had it. Really incredible weather all year round. It's a wonderful place to be connected to a lot of inspiring people. And I, you know, can't really complain about my childhood. I went to the local, public schools, which I thought gave me a lot of interesting experiences and helped prepare me for the real world going forward. And yeah, it was an incredible childhood.
So then talk to us about how music and physics as well, you know, played quite a role in your upbringing.
Well, you know, I started playing piano since I was 5 years old and violin since I was 8 years old. And at that time, I thought I was going to go into music professionally. But I then discovered my love of sciences as I was in probably middle school. I had a really terrific science teacher, and in high school, a chemistry teacher who really opened my mind to what science and technology can achieve. And I want to tell you a little bit about my parents, because my father was able to connect with some incredible medical device entrepreneurs, and one in particular whose name is Alfred Mann. He's no longer alive, but he developed devices that deliver insulin, that restore hearing to the deaf, that restore sight to the blind, and he made himself a billionaire. And I had the opportunity to get to know him and be inspired by him and work at his companies as early as being in high school. And I think that really sparked my desire and interest for finding a way for me to make an impact in healthcare with new technology. It was just an incredible beginning to what I hope will continue to be a fruitful career going forward.
And that's a tremendous opportunity, working alongside with someone that has had, you know, that tremendous amount of success. So I guess, what were some of the key ingredients that you took away from the experience of working with him that you knew you would apply, you know, being a leader?
Well, so let's take one example, this company that he founded called MiniMed, which is the company that I interned at when I was in high school. They developed an insulin pump for people with type 1 diabetes. And up until that point, the only method for people with type 1 diabetes to receive treatment was to monitor their glucose as best as they could and administer insulin to maintain their blood sugar levels. And if they didn't do it in just the right way, it could have pretty drastic consequences. When Al was developing this insulin pump, he was ahead of his time. People didn't appreciate the value that this type of technology could provide until after he had already essentially developed the product, and some studies were conducted that showed that this type of technology can really have a dramatic improvement in the efficacy and the outcomes for patients. And at that time, although he persevered for a long time to be able to develop this product, that's when everyone became interested, and that ultimately led to MiniMed being acquired by Medtronic in 2001 for $3.7 billion. And so what I learned was, you know, not necessarily to just focus on what everyone else thinks is hot right now, but instead to try to peel back the layers and identify the real opportunities to have an impact. Have conviction in what you're doing. Persevere, be resilient. And obviously, you have to be correct at the end of the day that what you're working on is going to be valued and important. But it gave me the motivation to persevere through all of the efforts that I've been through, including the PhD, the company that I'm building now. And I always keep that in mind. And when you think about these kinds of medical technology or biopharmaceutical innovations, the life cycles are very different than a technology company where you can build a software, you can get some traction with users quickly and identify whether or not it's going somewhere. In our case, we aren't allowed to sell to a single individual until we've gone through a very lengthy and expensive regulatory approval process. So there have to be other ways to be able to articulate the value of what you're working on. And his inspiration definitely has played a large role in my willingness and motivation to continue to work on what I'm working on.
And eventually for you, what you did is you went to get your PhD in bioengineering. But that was quite the pivotal moment because you had the opportunity of meeting your two co-founders. So how was that?
Yeah, well, it was an interesting story. I went to UC San Francisco and UC Berkeley to do a PhD in bioengineering. And just a little bit of context was before doing the PhD, I worked for a couple of years after my undergraduate, which I think provided some pivotal perspective for me because I went into the PhD program knowing that I did not want to become a professor and I did not want to continue in academia. But the reason that I went into the PhD program was so that I could become familiar with all of the new science and technology, and particularly related to drug delivery, because that's the company that I was working on. That's what they were focused on. So I ended up in this lab that was at the intersection of micro and nanostructured materials and how that can be applied to studying biology, tissue engineering, and drug delivery. And my co-founder, Kate Fisher, was the president of the UC Berkeley Nano Club, and they were hosting a business plan competition for nanotechnologies. And late one night in the lab, she, given what we were working on in the lab, she said, surely there must be some idea that we can put together to apply for this competition. And I was there late, and my two co-founders were there late, and we liked working with each other. And one of my other co-founders and I had the same idea for applying this nanoporous membrane technology for sustained continuous delivery of medicine from a small implant. And we put this idea together into a business plan presentation and ended up winning that competition, ended up sharing first place in the UC Berkeley business plan competition. We took that around the country and around the world. And ultimately, with the positive feedback we received, developed the confidence to start a company right kind of after we finished the PhDs.
So then talk to us about how this company came about, because this ended up becoming Nano Precision Medical, which obviously went through like a sequence of events that we'll talk about in just a little bit. But how do you guys arrive, to, hey, this is what we want to do. Let's do it together and let's go.
Yeah. So at first it was an exercise. We had this idea. I had written about it separately in one of the courses I took through this management of technology certificate program at the Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley, hosted allowing graduate level engineers and MBA students to take it together. I had written about this idea of applying this new type of nanoporous membrane, new type of drug delivery technology for helping really chronic diseases be treated in a more easier and convenient manner. But the business plan competitions and winning them and really understanding more about the market and beyond just the science and technology, which we were focused on at the time when we were in the PhD program, and a lot of encouragement that we received from those around us, as well as, again, as I mentioned before doing my PhD, my knowledge that I wanted to go back into industry. I wanted to either work for a company developing a product or start my own. I immersed myself in all of the opportunities to network. I joined all of the entrepreneurial organizations that existed at UC Berkeley and UC San Francisco. And all of that came together for us. We were able to attract some financing to get started, limited amounts at the very beginning. But that's kind of how it all came to happen. And I haven't looked back since.
That's incredible. So then talk to us about what ended up being the model for Nano Precision Medical. And then also at what point, you know, does it become, you know, perhaps an opportunity to become a public company?
Yeah. So, you know, I should mention that while we had this idea for this new type of technology, that's really all it was in the early days. We were familiar with a concept that this type of nanostructured material could achieve this performance with a material that wasn't so well suited for implantation. And we identified and we discovered a way of making it with a more suitable implantable material. But that's all it was. So the first few years of the company were research, where we were doing it in very inexpensive facilities that the universities enabled us to rent. We initially started with a bench and a desk in the basement of the bioengineering building of UC Berkeley campus, and then we moved off campus. And it wasn't really until at some point along that journey that we demonstrated that our thesis was turning out to be correct, that this type of material was indeed able to provide, you know, constant delivery of medicine over many months, that more capital was willing to, you know, be invested in our venture, including bringing on in a strategic investment from one of the large pharmaceutical companies, AstraZeneca, along the way. Now, the way that we became a public company was through a very interesting series of events that had to do with another company, actually one of the Alfred Mann companies. He was one of the founders of Second Sight Medical Products. This is a company that developed a prosthetic retina and received FDA authorization for a rare population of patients with a genetic disease called retinitis pigmentosa, to stimulate their optic nerve and provide them with some artificial vision where they were completely and profoundly blind prior to this this type of device being used. Now, right now, there's some buzz about, because Elon Musk and his company Neuralink is discussing applying their technology for restoring vision to blind people as well. But many people may not realize that this company, Second Sight Medical Products, already did that and brought it through clinical trials and received an FDA authorization. Now, that first product, for a variety of reasons, was not a commercial success. That company ended up winding down their operations, but keeping a skeleton crew and keeping the ability to resuscitate what they were working on going forward. But after they had wound down their operations, they received approval for a new set of external eyeglasses that were more comfortable and had a longer battery life that they had filed for prior to winding down the operation. Now, that announcement they made turned the company into a meme stock. This was in the GameStop era, and there was a lot of activity in their stock, and they were able to raise about $75 million of capital into this company that didn't really have a leadership team anymore, had kind of unclear prospects with the application they were pursuing with their technology, but a lot of capital. So what happened was they started to look at opportunities to invest that capital into related companies so that they could find a path forward for Second Sight Medical Products. We were one of the companies that they were evaluating, in part because some of the directors of Nano Precision Medical were also directors of Second Sight Medical Products. Second Sight formed a special committee of non-conflicted directors to evaluate Nano Precision Medical as an investment opportunity. And after getting to know us, that special committee proposed that we bring the companies together, primarily to focus on what Nano Precision Medical, my company, was developing, but also because our team was maybe in a position to try to put the technology behind this prosthetic retina on a path towards success. And what we've done is, since we became a public company and the merger closed a couple of years ago, primarily focused on these long-term drug implants for chronic disease treatments, primarily for weight management and diabetes, with the very exciting GLP-1 class, in which Ozempic and Wegovy, household names nowadays, are a part of. but we've taken the assets from Second Sight Medical Products, transferred them into a wholly owned subsidiary called Cordagent. The team had identified prior to the merger a different application of the technology, stimulating the visual cortex and being applicable to possibly 50 times the number of patients, so that the technology, which has been in an FDA-authorized application, may be able to have a commercially viable business. And we are right now, we filed an S-1 for Cordagent, and we're going to see if we can't independently finance the subsidiary around a new application of that technology. But we're primarily focusing on the drug implants for chronic disease treatments that Nano Precision Medical, my company, has been working on.
Hey, guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
At what point were you guys were like, hey, maybe we do this deal? Because I mean, it's not an easy, you know, transition going from being a private, you know, company, then all of a sudden you're like a public company reporting, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's a very good question. We certainly weren't aspiring to quickly become a public company. But at the time that we negotiated this merger, the capital that Second Sight was bringing to the table, and, you know, in addition to that, my own desire to see if we couldn't put the prosthetic retina technology to good use as well, because I had been familiar with Second Sight from its beginning days because of my father's involvement with Al Mann and the founding of that company. But both of those reasons, and given the other kind of investment or in financing opportunities that we had available to us at that time, let us decide to proceed with going through the reverse merger. The capital that ultimately was available, you know, has sustained us for quite a while. And it turned out that we negotiated that right at the peak of the markets. I think it was December of 2021. December of 2021 when that deal was negotiated. And since then, the markets had, you know, went through the last couple of years of pain. And hopefully now with kind of the macro conditions changing, inflation coming down, maybe interest rates coming down, you know, very soon, things can change. But it did get us through this period of time that has been very challenging for biotech companies, for smaller pre-revenue, early stage biopharma companies to be able to raise money. And now that we're about to begin clinical studies, we have FDA clearance to do so with one of our programs. And we're expecting clearance for the obesity program and the obesity study that we expect to be able to initiate in the fourth quarter of this year. Maybe now we're ready to take advantage of being a public company and the kind of exposure that being a public company can provide. Although the downsides of the public reporting aspects and being at the whim of the public markets and our sector and what's happening, which can be either in your favor or out of your favor, is something that we have to manage. Ultimately, that's where we are. I think we're in a good position going forward. But that's how that all came to be.
And how has it been to the experience of being the CEO of a public company?
You know, it's interesting because we are a public company because we have a listing on the NASDAQ. And there have been some moments when it's felt like we are a public company. As an example, earlier this year, we announced some weight loss data in obese mice and that the market reacted to extremely favorably. But I think being a public company today is very different than it was 20 years ago, in that there are so many more public companies. And just because we announce something doesn't mean the public actually knows it. So right now, we think we have such a compelling value proposition. And currently, we have an internal project called Project Radar Screen. We want to get ourselves on the radar so that people can be made aware of what it is that we're developing, because even though we're public, it's still a challenge to really feel public. With that said, I definitely have, we have incredible experienced advisors. Everyone else on the C-suite of the company has decades of successful experience doing this. I've been learning like drinking from a fire hose from all of them, and it's been a couple of years now. So I've been through the full cycle of all the quarterly and annual reports and, you know, been to investor conferences and cultivating analysts to write research reports. All of these are experiences and capabilities that were just unnecessary as a private company. But ultimately, I appreciate the value in these activities because it's much more important for a public company. So it's been an opportunity for me to learn a new set of skills, a new set of considerations, which I think will be valuable just to understand that more intimately in anything that I do going forward. Of course, you know, continuing to build this company continues to be my primary focus. But it's been definitely an adventure.
And how much capital have you guys raised to date for the overall entity? And how has it been the experience too of raising money?
Yeah, so we've raised money in a variety of different ways since Nano Precision Medical was first founded. The amount of capital outside of the capital that came to us from the reverse merger has been on the order of $50 million. And there was about $50 million in Second Sight Medical Products at the time that we went through the merger. And these financings have been, you know, initially friends and family, other rounds in which, you know, other family offices came on board. AstraZeneca making an investment was a fascinating experience dealing with a big pharmaceutical company. And earlier this year, we raised money through an investment bank as a public company on the back of the preclinical weight loss data that we obtained. And that took, you know, one day to do on the back of a lot of stock activity. So there have been very different means of obtaining financing that we've conducted. But it definitely has not always been easy, particularly in the earlier days. It takes a long time to cultivate relationships, convince people that this is a good investment opportunity. And it's a, particularly as a private company, it's a very inefficient marketplace to be able to connect investors to opportunities. It's a little different as a public company. It's somewhat more efficient, but as a small public company, there still are, I think, more efficiencies that we hope to be able to obtain as we grow bigger.
So obviously there's a lot of founders that are listening now. So I'm wondering, what could you tell them about how to articulate the value of what you're doing?
Well, let me first say that when I first, as an initial entrepreneur, would pitch our company, I think in the first sentence, I would use the words titanium oxide nanotubes, because that is the material that we have developed that we were so excited about. I think that I probably don't even use those words at all anymore until I get to the very end of a pitch, or maybe not even in the first conversation at all, because it's not, one needs to focus on the value that investors may realize, the market opportunity that exists, the problems that you're addressing, and how you're going to address them uniquely and effectively. How you do that, the nuts and bolts of the technology and the science behind it, become secondary. And that evolution in my articulation of our value proposition, I think reflects the judgment I've gained through the experiences in figuring out how to effectively articulate value. So I think for a first-time entrepreneur, my suggestion would be to focus on value. I also want to, I don't think that I can emphasize enough how important it is that the management team is seen as credible and that the investors are going to oftentimes think about who the people are just as much, if not more, than what it is that they're trying to develop. Because in the entrepreneurial journey, maybe the first idea that you're working on is going to be a home run, but that's not usually what happens. And being able to be nimble and to pivot when necessary and to demonstrate to investors that you're capable of assessing the situation and making intelligent decisions about what the next step should be as you go forward, I think is a critical attribute that you want investors to be able to perceive that you have.
So obviously talking about vision too, because I think that vision has a big component there. If you were to go to sleep tonight, Adam, and you wake up in a world where the vision of the company is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Well, I think that world is one in which anyone who could benefit from not having to worry about taking a pill or injection to manage their chronic disease can live their lives freely, can be healthy because they have a tiny implant in them that's easy for them to get and receive and replace, and really allow people to, this used to be one of our taglines, the freedom to live healthier. And so that vision that I just articulated has more to do with the external result of us succeeding in what we're doing as opposed to internally what our company would look like. But as far as our company, that's what I focus on. That's what's most important is what are we going to be doing for people? And of course, being able to do that would mean that we have a very efficient, scaled operation internally that allows us to have multiple programs developing products that enable us to improve treatment options for chronic diseases that are able to leverage a lot of the infrastructure that we've already built and more infrastructure that we do build. But that's ultimately the vision has to be on what it is that we're doing for people.
So let's say I was to bring you back in time now. You know, let's talk about the past. So let's say I bring you back in time maybe to 2010 when you were thinking about starting something of your own. And let's say you're able to go back in time and have a chat with that younger Adam. And you're able to give that younger Adam one piece of advice before launching a company. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
I think that the one thing that I wasn't prepared for, I knew that it was going to be very challenging in a lot of respects, but one area that I didn't really appreciate was the challenge of people, the challenge of cultivating people, managing people, and creating the right culture. And I would probably encourage that Adam to be prepared beyond the uncertainties and the challenges from financing, technology, manufacturing, regulatory, but to make sure that the people that are being brought to the table at the beginning of the company, that there's the investment in assessing them and making sure that they're the right people long term cannot be overlooked. And that's probably the one thing that Adam didn't understand or appreciate as much as I wish he did. Although I think we've managed fine with the people that we brought. That was something that I could have, that Adam could probably have understood better.
So for the people that are listening, Adam, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
They can contact me by email at just my first name, adam@vivani.com, V-I-V-A-N-I dealmakers.com, and I would be happy to hear from anyone. I've had a lot of people give me advice over my career, and I am always happy to pay it forward. I wish everyone luck. It's not easy, but it's very rewarding and fulfilling. And I definitely encourage people that want to make an impact on the world to put themselves out there and try their best. And just the trying is going to be fulfilling, I think, in and of itself. And I wish everyone the best. Please feel free to contact me.
Amazing. Well, Adam, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been my honor.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.